by Vachon. That was the French say, Vachon. This is the Brown Briefly, where less is more, more or less, coming to you live over KVSH 101.9 FM, Voice of Vachon, your island connection. Please make us part of your day. And be advised that our assertions and views, which can modestly be described as progressive persuasion, do not in any way reflect the opinions of KVSH or Voice of Vachon.
And, of course, that was the voice of Brian Brown, who is the originator and creator of the Brown Briefly. Brian started the Briefly and brought his high standards of hosting an intelligent discussion of current events. That's, of course, laced with humor and empathy. And Brian's central concept was less is more, more or less. And he always invariably brought us more. We are struggling to maintain his high standard. I don't think we always get there, but we certainly work at it.
We're struggling, yes.
We are struggling with that. Yes, we are. So starting out, let me introduce the Brieflies. We've got zooming in from his home, his historian you ready? I'm going to get through it. Historian extraordinaire. There we go. Skipper of the Vashona and president of the Vachon Heritage Museum. He's a party animal and our own globe-trotting guardian of the galaxy. Bruce Hallman. Hey, Bruce, how are you?
I'm doing well. It's interesting these mornings when you get this marine layer in here and sort of it feels very typical Vachon summer.
Exactly.
You get this cool kind of overcast morning, then by 10, 11 o'clock, even though not doing it quite by 11 today, it'll burn off. And then by this afternoon, it'll be bright and sunny. So
and hot.
That's why I love the Northwest.
Yeah, for sure. For sure.
It ain't Texas.
Man, is it hot down there?
Boy, I'll tell you. They're talking 115 or so. My old stomping grounds down there, 106, I think I saw the other day. Okay, and of course, sitting right next to me here is the former apprentice body shop and auto mechanic, Pinkerton guardian of the Pan Am's first 747, a furniture delivery man, tort law professor, two-time Fulbright scholar, I'm not going to say half-bright, and assistant attorney general, my pal, Craig Bellis.
Hey, thank you very much. I'm kind of disappointed that you're not going to be introducing Kevin today, because he's... out of range, because I wanted to hear you say indefatigable.
Yeah. There's no way I'm going there. I'm telling you right now, no way. No way.
It's pronounced indefatigable.
Thank you. That would be it.
No
fatigue involved in that. That's for sure. That's for sure. And I'm Truman O'Brien. I'm sitting behind the big red switch here on the in the Gene Bosch broadcast studio here in downtown Vachon. They introduced me as the flight instructor, Vachon Airport Commissioner, West Texas Roughneck, Eastern Montana band member, which I was, and a former intelligence specialist and a member of the Treetop Flyers with my pal Craig here.
Yep.
Truman, I've always wondered, is the switch really red?
Actually, they're
really big.
Yeah, but it's not very big, but there are a bunch of them that are red. They really are, yeah. They really are. But we always like to say the big red switch because, you know, if you throw that puppy, it's all over.
We could put one on there, one of those big buttons.
Big old buttons on it. Yeah, it'd be good. Actually, there's about, I don't know, probably 10 or 12 of them that are red. And a bunch of green ones as well.
And some yellow ones.
And some yellow ones and sliders. And it's kind of like flying, you know.
Trying to figure out what's what.
Yeah. Hey, so today in history, we've got a few things that are important today. 1652. You ready for this? The very first speed limit law in North America. Mm. It was in New Amsterdam, which is, of course, now New York City. And I looked it up. Do you know what the speed was?
No.
You can't go at a gallop.
Okay,
that was
okay.
It. wasn't any miles per hour. It was you couldn't take your cart or your horse at a gallop through.
So if you got a fast walker, you could pass everybody up.
You probably could. Yeah, yeah. Okay,
reminds me of U.S. Grant after he was an ex-president was actually arrested for driving too fast in Washington, D.C. Must have been galloping his horses on his carriage.
Yeah, no doubt.
I would have assumed that Grant was stopped for DUI.
Yeah. Yeah,
probably
no kidding.
That too,
right? No kidding. Okay, so hey, in 1746, I think is probably the first recorded in history of a drag performance. But that's Flora MacDonald helps Bonnie Prince Charlie, disguised as Betty Burke, an Irish maid, to evade capture by landing him on the Isle of Skye. So there you go. It's official.
Very timely.
Yeah. Timely, I thought. Yes, I thought it was. Let's see. Oh, now here's one. 1923, Captain Lowell Smith and John Richner performed the very first ever air-to-air refueling in a DH-4B biplane. How about that?
With a 10-gallon fuel tank.
Probably. Well, that's a couple hours of fuel, you know, those old babies. But there's actually a picture of it. They got the two biplanes and a hose going down between them.
Oh, boy.
That'd been pretty exciting.
Yeah.
So maybe, is this the precursor to the debt ceiling crisis? Because in 1929, Paul von Hindenburg, refused to pay the German debt from World War One.
Mm.
So there you go. Just wrecked their economy right there.
Well, he had a name that was somewhat doomed.
Yeah, it's von Hindenburg. Yeah. All right. And in 1950, there you go, the U.S. sends its first 35 military advisors to South Vietnam. That was in 1950.
Wow.
Yeah. And I don't know the year of Dinh Binh Phu. Do you happen to know that, Bruce?
53.
Okay. So 3 years before Dinh Binh Phu fell.
Were you amongst those first?
I was not.
Okay.
No. I was 12. No. No, actually, I wasn't even 12. I was four. But yeah, can you believe it? 1950. I found that interesting. 1986, Jim Henson's Fantasy of the Labyrinth, which was written by Terry Jones and starred David Bowie and Jennifer Connelly, who was only 16 at that time. It was released in the U.S. And by the way, Jennifer Connelly, we just were talking about her earlier. She was in the movie Once Upon a Time in America when she was only 14. So she had had quite a
career
before she even got out of her teens. A couple of birthdays, Helen Keller, 1880. And who else? Here we go. Willie Marconi in 1913. You know who Willie is? Willie Marconi? Marconi?
Sure.
Yeah, the big billiard player.
Yeah.
In fact, I found this pretty interesting. He was a technical advisor on the movie The Hustler, if you remember that, with Paul Newman and Jackie Gleason.
Yep.
And Jackie Gleason was kind of known as being a pretty darn good pool player.
Yeah, in real life, right?
Yeah, in real life. He played Minnesota Fats. And then Fast Eddie was Paul Newman. He had never held a pool cue in his life. But Marconi taught him how to walk and talk and shoot and swagger, you know, all of the stuff that those...
The whole pool room shtick.
Yeah, exactly. Which I thought was kind of cool. Did you see that movie?
A couple times.
Yeah, great movie.
I also saw Cool Hand Luke I sent you a scene from the other day.
Yes, you did. Yes, you did. I remember that. Mm-hmm. Yeah. That was one of my favorite movies, actually.
Another Paul Newman movie.
Yeah. By the way, I am the host today. We don't have a small talk guest today, so
you didn't bring in any pastries or anything. You're the host. You got to work on that.
I should do that. But then I'd get goo all over the panel here, and that would not.
That would get in big trouble.
Yeah, big trouble.
You could Uber him to my house.
There you go. Uber Eats, right? Uber Eats.
Yeah,
there you
exactly.
go. There we go. So on the personal level here, I have to admit, I just saw something recently that reminded me. One of my childhood movie idols was Lash LaRue. Alfred Lash LaRue. Do you know who he is?
Sure.
You guys remember him?
Yeah. Of course.
Yeah, he was like the marshal or whatever, but he carried a bullwhip instead of a pistol. Yeah, there was 11 movies. I didn't realize that between 1948 and 1951.
Yeah, the Lash LaRue series.
Yeah,
I guess is what that was referred to.
Yeah. It was, and I had, of course, I bought a bullwhip when we went down to Juarez.
You're gonna poke your eye out.
Well, I did snap my ears a few times. I can assure you, but I learned to crack that thing. I really did.
And tell the folks why it cracks.
Well, because the end of that thing breaks the sound barrier.
That's right.
Yeah. That's it. And I got so good with the thing I could take a cigarette out of a, you know, after I got older, out of my buddy's mouth.
I could take a hair off the top of a fly.
That's it. Almost. Almost. Yeah. Well, my buddy didn't believe me. I said, well, all right, you see that leaf on that tree? Watch this. Pow. And took the leaf off. And I said, okay, go ahead. And that dummy let me do it. But I did. It didn't hit him either.
That's good. Yeah.
Yeah. Pretty cool. You guys have any childhood heroes in your movie heroes, Bruce?
Oh, yeah. Yeah. Sort of. You know, we all grew up at the same time, and it's interesting how there was that whole group of sort of cowboy heroes the early 50s into the 1960s. You know, I mean, Marshall Dillon, Hopalong Cassidy, the Lone Ranger, you know, all of those kind of characters. Yeah. It was kind of a post-war, Cold War kind of way of taking the American West and transforming it into this sort of good versus evil.
Exactly. White hat, black hat. Yeah.
Yeah, right. Exactly. Yeah, exactly. So, I mean, of course, the Lone Ranger was always a hero with silver and, you know, all that kind of stuff. Yeah. And I started listening to him on the radio.
Yes.
As most of us did at that time. You know, that's where you heard most of these things. And then they got transferred to television. Right. So, Hopalong Cassidy, of course, was one of them, you know.
Oh, yeah.
The opening scene is he's riding at a full gallop. They would have arrested him in New Amsterdam, probably.
Yeah, they would have.
I think they accelerated that footage a little for that.
Yeah, a little bit. Yeah.
Well, I've never seen a horse take a turn quite that fast.
Well, I have to tell you that, you know, in all of those movies where the good guy's riding in front and he grabs a limb and swings up into the tree and then jumps down on the bad guys.
Right.
When I was about three or maybe four, I had a horse named Silver. And Silver was, man, he was a huge horse. I don't know, 15 hands. Mm-hmm. I mean, he was really a big horse. And, of course, my dad would put me up there on that little tiny saddle. And I was riding around in our yard in Wickett, Texas, and there was this branch. And I rode under that branch, and I reached up, and I got a hold of that branch. And I can see it today as if it were yesterday. That horse walked slowly out and dragged my legs right over the saddle and off his rump, and there I hung. And I couldn't do anything else. And I started shouting for my dad came out. And of course, he was laughing because here I am hanging from this branch. And he gets under me and he says, okay, let go. I've got you. No way. I'm not going to let go. I was hanging onto that branch. I was not going to drop. Not a chance. He finally, seriously, had to go get a ladder.
Oh, my.
And climb up and get me. I hung there. I don't know how long I hung there, but a long time.
Yeah.
And
that's not easy.
No. That was...
I did that on occasion, but I did it unintentionally.
Oh. You ran into a branch.
The branch knocked me off the horse.
Yeah.
Yeah. My idol, it was interesting when you mentioned this. I was thinking to myself the same thing, going through all those cowboys and everything. Yeah. And then I thought, well, then there's Buster Crabbe and Flash Gordon. And that was kind of cool. But then it didn't take me long to realize who was my idol when in my younger days. And more as I got older, the King of Cool. Steve McQueen.
Oh, yeah.
I mean, when he started out with the movie The Blob, he went into The Wanted, Dead or Alive, and, of course, Bullet, The Magnificent Seven.
Yep.
The Great Escape.
He did all of his own motorcycle stuff.
Not all of them.
No, except for The Jump.
Exactly. Yeah. But he did race They said he had over 100 collector cars and motorcycles.
Really?
Yeah, wow. And his short life of 50 years.
Wow.
I always dug him. And I guess his one true love is a woman he was married to, I think, for 5 years, Allie McGraw.
Really? Yep. I didn't realize that.
Yeah.
Hmm. When I was a kid, my cousin was always Roy Rogers, and I had to be Gene Autry. Right? Mm. So that's because... Yeah, Roy Rogers.
Better than Dale Evans, I guess.
Yeah. Well, Roy was too squeaky clean for me, I guess. Well, that was true until I finally met Gene Autry. He was at Fat Talk Stock Show in Houston that we went to. And he came in and he was about half drunk, and he sat down in the chair. We were in a school classroom where he was supposed to come in and lecture us. Came in and flopped down in the chair and stuck his boots up on the desk with his spurs on, digging into the desk, and we all went, ooh, you know. So that kind of, he kind of lost his.
I guess he was quite the real estate mogul. I understand. He bought a lot of L.A.
Yeah.
When L.A. wasn't much.
Yeah, but he was a little bit of a drinker.
Yeah, and baseball teams.
Yes.
And for a while, he owned KVI Radio and KVI Beach.
Did he really?
Yep, Golden West Broadcast.
I didn't know that.
Yep.
There you go.
See, there is a connection there.
Yeah, see.
Oh, be darned.
Good old G. But could you sing? That's the question.
Yeah, no, I could not. But he did. Well, both of them did, Roy and
that's
and
right.
Both did. All right. Well, I had to go through those. When I saw Lash LaRue, I thought, oh my gosh, I can't believe him. So, hey, local news. So I guess today there's only one ferry slip available. They worked on one, and so you had to use the opposite one yesterday. And then today you're supposed to be able to use the one they worked on yesterday. They're going to work on one today. So how do you guys handle the ferry delays? I mean, what do? Do you just...
Zen.
Yeah, I was going to say.
Zen, right? Take a book.
Philosophical about it. You know?
Well, you kind of have to be, don't you? I mean...
You do. It's difficult when you have a doctor's appointment or you've got a plane to catch. You just leave earlier on those days, and spend half your day at the airport.
Well, when I was flying, working, I'd always leave three ferries ahead of when I needed to, just so I could make it. And of course, I think of one of my buddies that lives here on the island. He lives over on Maury, and he rode his motorcycle to the airport every day so that he could not every day, but so he could park close in. And one morning he got up and he was coming down the hill there off of Maury, and it was icy. Ooh. And he laid that bike down, and as he's skidding along on the ice, he's thinking to himself, oh no, I got to call crew scheduling because I'm never going to be able to get to work.
And then he finally came to a stop.
And he got up and he went, oh, kind of dusted himself off, got up, went on to work, flew a trip. But anyway.
Well, it's a measure of how spoiled we are, because there wasn't always two slips at the north end.
Exactly.
For a long time, there was a single slip until the late 50s, early 60s. They put in the second slip. But when they did, we lost the store at the end of the line.
Right.
It used to be a store and a little lunch counter kind of thing, a place you could buy coffee and, donuts, that kind of stuff, at the end of the dock. And so when they put in the second slip, that all went away. And in fact, the guy who owned the store on the end of the dock built the building and opened the store that's now John L. Scott Realty, at the turn.
Yeah, yeah. At the Y there. Oh, I'll be there.
Right. Yeah, right. So,
at least we got the mermaid there now.
Yeah.
Exactly. Yeah. Right. Yeah. Yes. Yeah, right.
Wow. Now, I did not know that. I didn't. That was, of course, before I moved out here in 75. So that was before, I guess. Well, when did they add the walk on ferry? I mean, that's fairly recent, right?
That was 1990.
That's when they started.
1890.
That's right.
They
did have them in 1890.
Well, they were like
that's a
walk-on. They added it as a Washington State ferry. Then Washington State got out of it, and then King County picked it up. So they put that dock in the early 90s.
And it's a beautiful dock. I mean, gosh.
It is a beautiful dock. I remember when I was on the community council back in those days, the county wanted to cover the entire dock to the tune of many millions of dollars. Mm-hmm. And the community council got together and goes, don't spend money putting a roof all the way down that dock. Use it for something else.
You know? Yeah. My gosh. Yeah, well,
maybe a new ferry.
Yeah, exactly. No, gosh, not that we need a new one, but and by the way, I heard that they're not going to go to a three boat schedule until like next year. Maybe
that's right.
So it's just going to be still the two boat then.
Yep. If we're lucky.
Yeah, it's interesting. In fact, if I can throw in a bit of history, when the Washington State ferry system was formed, you know, they bought all the Blackmore ferry boats, which were relatively new boats because they had been built in the late 30s for San Francisco Bay. Oh. And when, you know, when the Golden Gate Bridge opened, all of those ferries came up to Puget Sound, you know, so the steel electrics. So the Washington State ferry system started with a set of relatively new boats. Then they built a number of boats. And then they didn't build boats again until the 1980s.
Oh, my gosh.
And they built. So what was happening was sort of the ferry fleet was starting to fall apart by the late 70s, early 80s. Then they built the Issaquah class ferries and those boats. And sort of they had propulsion problems to start with, of course, but ultimately they got working and got them in place. And then they added boats in the 90s, but mostly for other runs. You know, the Bainbridge run, they bought in the super ferries and then the super ferries. Mm-hmm. And then in the 2010s, they built, you know, the Chemetska and a few of those, but none for the Vashon run. Mm-hmm. So basically, the Vashon run is running off of ferries that were built in the 1980s.
Oh, my gosh.
And we've seen basically 30, almost 40 years of benign neglect. And mm-hmm. and the legislature just recently, you know, what they passed legislation for some number of billions of dollars to build new ferries, but it's going to be 4 or 5 years down the line.
Well, you know, so, I think they're trying to stretch the life of those ferries by not having crew show up. So
not as many miles. Right.
Yeah. Well, that's one way to cut down on the traffic on them.
Yeah.
Oh,
so
my gosh.
You take benign neglect of ferries falling apart and COVID with firing half the ferry system. You know, sort of, no wonder we don't have ferries.
No kidding. So this leads us right up to the
postcard that we all got from King County talking about possible zoning changes for Vashon. Allow more uses on several commercial and industrial zone parcels in Vashon Town. Remove design requirements. I didn't know there were any design requirements.
Yeah, for you wouldn't believe that there was, looking at Vashon.
Remove the Vashon Affordable Housing Special District Overlay. Allow more density in the town, mixed use. Remove the two-story limit. Those are not done deals. Those are possible, and the postcard that was sent out is requesting a comment. Mm-hmm. I'm always suspicious of those sort of things. Because, again, the community council has always had a subcommittee typically that has made recommendations after much study and surveys. Mm-hmm. And also based on some basic litmus tests, one being let's try to keep the island as rural as we possibly can. Right. There are changes that are good, in my opinion, but everybody seems to agree that they think we are a bit of a rural jewel in the middle of a dense urban area.
Right. So, I know that when I was working on the K2 project a number of years ago, that this was when we were doing the comprehensive plan. The King County Comprehensive Plan was completely redone, and written into that comprehensive plan was a change of zoning from that K2 area from industrial to community business. And the idea there was that it would be able to handle many more businesses because they were community business, not, you know, purely industrial. But I know there was a lot of uproar about losing that industrial designation. And I think right now, just about the only places on 188th there where GT Sheffield and I believe that's all the
open space back there. Yeah.
Yeah. And I'm not sure if open space, if they're industrial still,
I don't know,
but I think it's been changed as well. But anyway, so I think one of the ideas that they're looking at is to add some more industrial, which is controversial to say the least.
The comprehensive plan that was done in the early 1950s for the Vashon Bridge.
Oh yeah.
The whole north end of Maury Island was going to be industrial.
Really?
It was going to be 50,000 people on the island.
Whoa.
A freeway that ran right down the middle of the island, Vashon Parkway, limited access freeway right down the middle of the island. You know, something like 7 grammar schools, 3 middle schools, you know, 2 or 3 high schools. I mean, it was just sort of like, wow, this is post-war dreaming of what the future would be like on Vashon Island. And
wow.
The bridge collapsed and never, you know, never got built. It's sort of like, wow.
I think it comes, that issue, issue comes back about every 30 years, doesn't it?
Exactly. Oh, the bridge, yeah. Well, I think when I first moved back out here in 91, thereabouts, I think there was some talk about it. That's when the torches and pitchforks came out.
Exactly right. Yeah, that's right.
The meeting at Chautauqua or McMurray or wherever it was.
Yeah, I moderated that meeting.
Oh, yeah.
And it was something. We estimated that there were almost 2,000 people.
Is that right?
Which is a heck of a percentage.
Of the island, yeah. Know?
I always thought it was funny. I've said this before, and I apologize, but I've always thought Vashonites are a bit schizophrenic. Vashonites oftentimes want ferry boats lined up almost bow to stern from one side to the other, but they'll chain themselves to a caterpillar if there's any mention of a bridge.
Yeah, isn't that funny? And if they did put a bridge in, of course, the best place would be over on Colvos, you know, which makes sense, actually. You know, I hate to say that.
What makes sense?
I won't say that out loud.
Are you serious?
Well, it's going over to the Kitsap. You know, it's not like it's going to downtown Seattle. Come on.
Well, maybe if they didn't have an exit.
No, there you go. On Vashon.
Right. Yeah. Exactly. that actually was the proposal to begin with, was to build a high-level bridge, just like the Tacoma Narrows Bridge, mm-hmm. from north end of Vashon to Southworth. And then the connecting bridge would be a floating bridge over to Brace Point, you know, Fauntleroy.
Yeah. Yeah.
And one of the proposals was not to build the floating bridge, but just to build the high-level bridge, sort of connect us to Kitsap, sort of like Bainbridge is connected.
Right.
And that didn't go through either, thank goodness, but it would have changed Vashon dramatically.
Oh, yeah. I've always been a proponent of the vacuum tube.
Yeah,
approach,
like
that. You know,
like they used to have in department stores.
One person at a time.
Yeah,
kind of thing.
I like it. That's a good idea, Craig. All right. So anyway, what's the comment period on that?
I'm not sure it shows up on this picture here. No, I can't tell you. I don't know.
Okay.
But look for that, and if you have a comment, please share it with King County.
Yeah, for sure. Bruce, you were talking about the Big Sky fundraiser that's going to be held for the Land Trust. What can you tell us about that?
Oh, yeah. I think it's July 29th, if I remember.
I think that's correct.
Uh-huh. It's an evening at the historic Matsuda Farm. It's a great outdoor evening kind of thing. The Land Trust has been doing it for a number of years. They do a big pie thing where people bring pies and share pies, and they have a sort of open dinner kind of thing under a big tent. It's quite a nice evening, but it's a way to celebrate the Land Trust. Mm-hmm. And I think we can just, I was out this morning just walking with a couple of friends through Island Center Forest, and just amazing the work that's been doing between the county and the Land Trust, you know, maintaining the trails, keeping trails well signed. I mean, it's just, we live in a little bit of paradise here when it comes to outdoor trails and horse trails, you know, walking trails, bike trails over in Dockton Park.
My wife's out there today cutting trails for the Land Trust.
Yeah,
sure. Right. Every Tuesday morning, I guess there's a 2-hour work party, a trail work party going on somewhere with the Land Trust. So we're really fortunate. I mean, 5-10 minutes away from where almost anybody on the island lives, you can be out on a wilderness trail. And when you get back in them, it's amazing. I mean, you know, the other day it was in Island Center Forest, and there must have been 8-10 cars parked in the parking lot, and walked for an hour, hour and a half or so, didn't see anybody.
Yeah, that's
so
huge.
All those people are distributed out there, but it's big enough and sort of open enough. And right now, I mean, all the undergrowth has grown up. I mean, in the winter, when you walk through it, sort of like you can actually see a bit. And now it's sort of like, wow, you're in the middle of this jungle.
Yeah.
And the banana slugs are out.
That's it makes the trail a little slippery. Yeah. Well,
I love them.
I'm gonna toot my own horn here a minute, guys. You can thank Jake Jakubowicz and me for those trails. That's a true story. When we first made our agreements with the Park District and the Land Trust, they were not going to have open trails at all anywhere on the island. Their original thought was the Land Trust is going to lock this stuff up and keep it original, you know, that it wouldn't be changed at all. And Jake Jakubowicz and I said, we are not going to sign any kind of a deal that does not include public access, because we are a park district. We can't restrict access to that. And we forced the Land Trust to do that. And when they did, they all of a sudden went, oh my gosh, what a great idea. You know, now people can walk all over our property and they'll support us. Duh. You know, but seriously, it was Jake and I that did that.
Good work.
Yeah, it was amazing.
Big thanks.
Yeah, thank you. You're welcome. No, but it, you know, and now I have to commend them. They have just, like you said, they have just done a spectacular job. I even gave them an easement to go across part of my property, about 10 feet. the trail that goes over by off of 204th.
Yeah. Well, they're working to get the trail. I mean, used to be you could go from Tahlequah to the north end without ever really getting on a road, you know. So I think the idea is to ultimately rebuild that, at least from Judd Creek to town.
Yes.
Where you can just, cross a few roads, but basically you'll be on trails the whole way. It's a great concept.
It is. Fabulous. Off of, I can't remember the street now, but it's over by where they built the sorry, I'm going to get it here in a minute.
Sounds like.
Well, you go from JT Sheffield down to the north, and you end up at Rose Pollen. That's what I was trying to think of. That, you know, they were talking about.
You
trying
still
to,
got it.
Well, it's in there somewhere. just digging it out. But they were gonna improve that road, and then it kind of came to a point where they said, well, do we want to keep this trail or road? And I think it's primarily trail, is it not? Still,
right. Yeah. It is. Yeah. Right. Yeah. 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 One of the other things I think, the creativity of the Park District and the Land Trust together is always just amazes me. When we developed that. The sign, the Vashon sign that recognizes Vashon as the traditional land of the Schwababs people, right. You know, that beautiful Daniel Baptista design, Puyallup artist design. We wanted to put those at every trailhead. And the Park District has a regulation of no signs other than park signs, mm-hmm. You know, and sort of information signs at trailheads. Tom Dean and the Land Trust worked with the board of Park District, and they redefined those as not as signs, but as artwork.
Oh.
So you can have artwork at the head of it.
That's good.
That's clever. That's creative.
So if you go, trail you go to, you'll see that small metal sign of this is the traditional land of the Schwababs, our Swiftwater people. And it's that kind of creativity of sort of, yeah, you got rules and regulations, but how do you work around them to do something that's good for the community?
Make it work. Yeah, that's great.
I should mention Washington Trails. That association comes over and does a lot of work on Vashon at the behest of the county. So they do a lot of work on the trails.
Well, and also the aquatic trails. Winghaven, I think, is one of their stops at
Winghaven and the Marine Park,
right?
So just south of Point Robinson and Liza Beulah are all part of that marine trail that runs from north end of Vancouver Island down to Olympia. It's a kayak marine trail, all for its human or sail powered small boats.
Right.
You can pull up, spend the night. They have campgrounds, porta potties. It's really neat.
It's a great concept. And speaking of that, our pal Rod Mosley recently competed in the, what did they call that?
The 2470?
Yeah, it goes from
48. From
Point Defiance somewhere in there.
Yeah, it goes from the harbor down there in Tacoma up to Point Towns,
Port Townsend.
Yeah,
right.
All kayaks and
Beat his personal best by I think 10 hours.
Wow! Wow!
Yeah. Hey, by the way, I have to just mention this too. His daughter was in the Western 100, the run down in the Gold Country here this weekend, and I think 370 people entered the race. She was 15th amongst the women, and I think 42nd or something overall, which is unbelievable.
That is amazing.
Running 100 miles and steep up and down, you know, amongst the miners. Well, they're gone now. Quite an accomplishment.
Wow, that is an accomplishment. Well, no wonder the pressure was on Rob to perform. if his daughter's going to do that, you know, it's up to
him.
Yeah,
she's quite the runner.
Okay, hey, how about fireworks? We got 4th of July coming up. What's what do you guys think about fireworks? Don't let everybody jump in at once.
Barges are on people's front lawns.
Say it again. The what is?
I said on barges.
Oh,
or
on barges.
On
yeah, right.
So like, I think community fireworks displays. I think, you know, I'm all for them. You know, you have to worry about dogs and cats and animals, but you know, it's something concentrated. It's when everybody has their own private fireworks on their front yard. That's when it gets a little out of hand, I think.
I completely agree.
People have strongly held opinions on this. I'm going to be right in their faces. I'm with you guys. I really do love the fireworks in Quartermaster out there on the barge, but I'm not a big fan. I used to be, you know, when I was a pyromaniac.
You're reformed.
That's right. Well, it's as much as a guy can be. But between our dogs and horses and cats, and I see what they go through. But more importantly now, there was a big article, and my wife talked to some hotshots who were talking about the fire season this year and about how extraordinarily dangerous it's predicted to be. And yesterday in the Seattle Times, there was a lengthy article entitled Pacific Northwest Prime for Wildfires as Officials Prepare for Likely Active Season. Now, that's what is referred to as a euphemism. If you read the article, it says, as fires begin torching Olympic National Park, the Columbia Basin, and elsewhere, Pacific Northwest lawmakers and fire officials are bracing for a wildlife season that could be worse than anywhere else in the United States, and one of the worst we've ever had in the state of Washington. So, brings up the topic of what we're doing 2 weeks from now when we have proponents and opponents of the fire district levy. Oh, yeah. Lid.
Well, the one thing that I saw, a couple of years ago, were the people who are lighting these, can't remember what you call them, but you take a paper bag and you have a fire under it and it floats.
Oh, yeah, float them up, you know, yeah.
And, boy, those things are incredibly dangerous. They're a fire, forest fire waiting to happen.
Yeah.
But they were lighting them off, you know, it's like, come on.
About four or five years ago, a couple of years before the pandemic, some people on the Burton Peninsula had sent some up, and they drifted out over the harbor, and the winds took them north. One of them landed right at the corner there where you come up from Monument Road and you hit the road down to Ellisport, burned a barn down.
Oh, yeah. That was the year I was talking about.
That's
crazy.
It's going to be interesting to see how, because King County has basically outlawed private fireworks, you know. Mm-hmm. It's going to be interesting to see how that's enforced, if it's enforced, you know, if there's enough, you know, personnel, law enforcement personnel.
Oh, both of them?
Yeah. Right. You know, right. So,
I guess so. They won't have the fireworks stand then, obviously.
I assume not.
Supposedly not, but, you know, who knows? Yeah. You know, it'd be interesting. Yeah. But talking about wildfires, I mean, Vashon has burned several times.
I was just going to ask you that, Bruce. Yeah.
Significant. Yeah. In fact, Bianca Perla talks about, apparently about 1,700 years ago, there was a massive fire that burned almost all of the Puget Sound Basin. I mean, just massive kind of fires. And when you read about the early settlers coming in here, I mean, they said, I mean, during the summer, there would be a layer of smoke, just like 2 or 3 years ago when we had the Canadian smoke. Yeah. It would be like that for weeks, just of local wildfires. Wow. And then a number of fires, particularly in the 1920s and 30s, wildfires, because a lot of the slash and, you know, areas had been logged, and so a lot of dry slash around. I mean, fires that would just sort of race up the island. Big fire in the 1920s burned from Tahlequah almost up to Liza Beulah, and then the wind changed and sort of blew it south.
Wow.
Same thing happened at Center, burned all the way from just north of Burton up to Center. Wind changed, blew the fire back on itself. But,
yep,
you know,
it can happen. It can happen here. It has before. Right. You don't have to worry about Truman and me, though. We couldn't start a fire to save our soul when we crashed
in
the forest.
Cold, wet, and freezing to death.
That's
Where's that flint? Yeah. Where's my Boy Scout skills right now?
Well, we used to, actually, we took the battery out of the airplane and started the fire with that battery. It worked. I mean, we got it going. We just couldn't keep it. Our Boy Scout skills were a little lacking.
I branded my hands.
You did, yeah. It fried your fingers on the thing, but it worked. It worked. You know, though, so I remember when the town of Vashon caught fire. That was in the late 70s. And I was a volunteer firefighter at the time and had a new baby at home. And so I had turned down my Plectron. And in the morning, my buddy's wife called my wife and said, well, is Truman out, you know, still fighting the fire? And she goes, what fire? And I slept through it. And so I got up and raced in and put out the spot, you know, the what was left of the thing, but took out two or three buildings downtown.
Right there with pharmacy and print shop right in that area. Yeah. Burned that.
One of the things that one of my friends was standing over in front of what's now Maze, and he had one of the hoses and he had it fanned, so, you know, he was protected, and then he turned the thing to shoot the fire, and he said he about burned up. I think it maybe even knocked the window out behind him. It was so hot. But
wow.
But as long as he had that fan up, it protected him. It was kind of interesting. Okay, so what else we got here? We can move into some of our national news.
There's national news?
Yeah, I know. It's all been pretty interesting. One of the subjects that we didn't cover, I think, last week or the week before was all the Republican candidates. And the question was, do any of them have a chance against Trump? And also, what's going on right now with Trump and the recording? Did you guys hear the recording last night?
Yeah.
Wow.
Yep.
That unbelievably damning. And Trump is saying, I cannot believe this, full exoneration. If you listen to that tape, that completely exonerates me. It's like, what planet is he from?
Well, you know, it's when people have supported you for many years, it's really difficult to get people to change their minds.
Well, you know, I anytime I look
Facts
at one
be
of the,
damned.
Exactly. Anytime I look at one of these things that comes up, though, I try and, you know, I got buddies that are on that over there, and I try and look at it from their point of view.
Sure.
And I just try to do, and I'll be damned, I cannot do it with this guy.
Now he's if I can be as irreverent as he is, now he's taken on the Christ figure.
I know.
I have been indicted
for you.
Like Pontius Pilate has called me up for you. It's really extraordinary. I don't know. The question becomes, all right. So his goose is cooked. They've got him dead to rights. Is there any chance he won't get convicted? And the answer is yes.
Yeah.
There is. Yeah. He's relying on basically jury nullification.
Right.
He just needs one juror to say, I don't care what the judge has instructed me. Like the dude, and I think he's being persecuted, and this is all a witch hunt.
And all it takes is one, right?
Well, yeah, for a hung jury, right.
Yeah.
But he can be retried, of course,
Yeah, right. That's the issue.
And that is a big risk in the district they're in Southern Florida.
Well, right. But now that's a question. If they do have a hung jury, can they change the venue? I mean, can they?
Unlikely, very unlikely.
Yeah, because they're kind of stuck with it now because of where the indictment came down.
Yep.
Wow, and the other thing that blows me away is releasing the names of the 84 witnesses
that he's not supposed to talk to.
Yeah. That's going to work, don't
yeah.
you?
Yeah. Oh, yeah. Yeah.
But so, Craig, what happens? What happens if he does?
If he talks to him?
Yeah.
Well, I mean, the judge will ratchet up. Yeah, he'll call him in if the prosecutor says we have evidence that he's been talking to these people, and it could go everywhere from don't do that again, or I'm going to fine you X number of dollars, to you're going to sit in jail.
But is it the woman, the judge there in Florida, that would be determining
probably.
That?
Yeah. Oh, I wouldn't. I don't. You know, the Supreme Court today surprised us all with the opinion they came out with, rejecting this concept of the independent state legislature rule that said the North Carolina that had this law that said with regards to elections in our state, the courts don't have any authority whatsoever, and we can do whatever we want. And the Supreme Court goes, not since Marbury versus Madison.
Exactly.
No, that's not the way it works. There's a little checks and balances we have to have, so.
Well, in federal elections, right? I mean, that's what they're talking about.
No,
right?
They're talking about all elections.
And all elections?
All elections, state and federal elections.
Oh, no, I didn't get
and
that
And the Supreme Court said, nope. That's not constitutional.
Whoa. No, I wasn't aware of that. I thought it was only national.
Yeah, well, it's so important because it has so much to do with districting.
Sure, sure. Yes. Well, the gerrymandering and all that goes into that, right? Yep. Interesting. So let's see. What about Republican candidates? You guys, what do you think of these guys? Pence, Hutchinson, Scott, DeSantis? De-sanctimonious or whatever it is that Trump is calling him now.
Well, I love the people who call him Rhonda Santos.
No, I had not heard that.
The cross-dresser.
That's it. Help me, Rhonda. I don't think they have a prayer.
Really?
I think that Trump, assuming that he hasn't been convicted of a crime that prohibits him from running for president, will be the Republican Party's nominee, especially when you got every one of these other nominees saying they'll support whoever the nominee is. Who's the only one? But Chris Christie and maybe one other that didn't want to sign on to that. But it's just unbelievable. DeSantis, even the Republicans that I've talked to comment about, he's just one of the most dislikable guys.
Yeah, just in general.
Yeah, just in general. Yeah. Pence, of course, really appeals to the far Christian right.
Yeah,
as somebody said, do we really need a speech to answer every single question with that sort of toy poodle head nod? I'm not being very kind.
I really think Pence is the stealth candidate here. I think Pence is the one who can pull it off.
Really? You think so?
How do you feel like he could sneak in there? He's not going to take on his boss head on.
No, but I think, if Trump stumbles, and I think Trump will stumble a number of times between now and it's going to come down to the convention. And, the convention is going to be very reluctant to put Trump in as a candidate. Because even the fervent believers are not convinced he can beat anybody. You know,
well,
and so who becomes?
He never has gotten more votes than anybody else.
Exactly. You know, and so who becomes the candidate that could win? Mm-hmm. And that's where Pence is that kind of bland, milquetoast kind of never offends anybody unless you're not a Christian kind of person. And so it's going to be really interesting to see.
Okay, well, let's see. What else do we have on our list here?
We got the whole Russian.
What about the coup attempt? Where are we with that? And now, what's the latest?
Wasn't that dramatic?
Well, it was like, here we are. We're on our way to Moscow, and then 100 miles short.
Yeah.
Turned around.
But they shot down how many pilots?
Yeah.
They shot down Russian pilots and Russian planes, about a dozen of them or something.
Supply. I think there were supply stuff.
Seven helicopters is what I read.
Okay. Is that right?
Yeah. And a number of other, you know, supply planes and stuff.
Yeah.
And it's really the one thing I saw the other day just was that apparently the Russian security services, the ex-KGB, kind of had threatened the families of the Wagner Group leaders, and because they were all sort of exposed within Russia. But it's still, I mean, it's a very odd sort of thing that that there would have been this rebellion, been this kind of mutiny, and then barreling toward Moscow, like 124 miles out of Moscow, they stop and turn around. And it's sort of like, these guys are going to go away.
Yeah, you know? It's like, oh, never mind.
Yeah, and the Wagner Group, I mean, the leaders who just sort of pulled them together and made them into the sort of the elite fighting group they are, if you will, compared to the Russian army. You know, these guys are going to disappear.
I look at this as chaos theory. Right. Anything could happen, and I think anything will happen. Yeah. I mean, there are people who have more conspiratorial views of this whole, deal as being choreographed in some way or whatever the case may be.
A false flag.
Yeah, people love that kind of thing, and of course it's possible. But I think that the situation is in such flux right now that we're not sure what's going to happen. He was on Twitter and social media nonstop, and all of a sudden, bam, nothing.
Well, and how about Belarus? I mean, when the Soviet Union broke up, all of the satellite countries gave up their nukes.
Except,
none of them.
That's true. But
Russia had them all. Yeah. But now Putin's saying, oh, he's going to give them to Belarus, a whole slew of them. And what's the guy's name in Belarus?
Lutsenko.
Yeah, saying, any of you guys who want nukes, just come and join us. And like they're trying to reestablish the USSR.
Yeah.
I mean, is that what's going on? I don't know.
Lutsenko is not noted as being a particularly long ball hitter.
Yeah, I was going to say. Is that like not real smart? Is that what you're saying?
Yeah.
Well, anyway, I find that very interesting and a little bit disturbing.
Well, what will be fascinating is if the Wagner leaders, are alive in 30 days or not.
Yeah.
And that's going to tell you a lot about what's really happening.
What did they say, that they're staying in a hotel that has no windows?
Yeah, don't stand near windows and have a taster.
I thought that was pretty interesting. Right. Well, when I first heard it, I thought, what are they talking about? They went, oh, never mind. I get it.
Wild. It's just absolutely wild. Yeah. Although, the other issue, of course, is regardless of what happened there, it seems like it does give Ukraine, a step up, because most of those soldiers, which were the best trained fighting, soldiers, mercenaries, are basically no longer in the fray. So it's something I think that Ukraine could use to their advantage. And certainly you didn't want, I can never remember how to pronounce his name, the head of the Wagner Group to take over Over Russia. That would have been a god-awful disaster.
Right.
So...
So you know, something I've thought about for quite a while is all of the destruction that's been done in Ukraine against all of the infrastructure and all of the apartment buildings and all of that. Where does the money come from to rebuild all of that? And where do the contractors come from? And where do, I mean, is Russia going to be involved in that? Is that going to be the next big economic boom for Russia? Is rebuilding what they've destroyed? I kind of wondered about if there were some, not to be conspiratorial here, but if there was some of that in mind when they started blowing stuff up. You know?
Well, they do say, you know, the head of the Wagner Group, did say that the war really was, you know, to line the pockets of some of the wealthy, you know, leaders in Russia, and that may be part of the plan or thought.
Sure. And go in and destroy all this stuff, and then they've got all these huge contracts to come back and rebuild it all. You know, I don't know. Okay, well, where are we, guys? We got about
we're
4 minutes.
We're back at the Russian Revolution in 1910 on that time frame.
Exactly.
Yeah. Well, it was fascinating to me to listen to Putin sort of referring to the 1917 revolution and sort of that, you know, I mean, he obviously, you know, felt threatened and made that call to sort of say, hey, let's not go down that road of the Bolshevik Revolution again. And whether that had an influence over the Wagner Group leadership or whether, you know, threats to their family or whatever got them to turn, make a 180-degree turn and just back off. I mean, it's very bizarre to me. I mean, because they would have been in Moscow, you know, in half a day, you know, 120 miles, even if you're dragging tanks and all that. And they had an impressive armada with them. I mean, they were well equipped.
Yeah,
and they would have been sitting in the Kremlin. And what would that have done? I mean, go back to your chaos theory, Craig. What would that have done to the Soviet Union?
I know.
And to the nuclear arsenal, I mean, all those kind of things. Stuff.
Well, I think that the whole event did raise the consciousness of Muscovites. I mean, here they're being told that, you know, to stay in their homes and they're not
shelter
supposed to drive
place.
To work, yeah. You know, and why? The war is coming to Moscow? You know, our protector, Putin, has kind of lost control.
Well, and they think maybe even fled, you know? I mean...
Yeah, either he fled town or he headed to a bunker somewhere nearby.
Yeah.
But that's got to rock your, you know, your confidence as a citizen of Russia.
Absolutely. Absolutely.
I think so, but remember January 6th?
Yeah.
Well, you know, there you go.
Like, what's the difference?
Well, those were patriots.
Yeah. Oh, yeah, right. Yeah, right.
And not so very well equipped.
Never mind.
Or trained.
So it's the Wagner Group. I mean, they're really, they're there for the good of Russia, right?
Yeah. Yeah.
So it's sort of like, wow. I mean, do we have our Wagner Group moment on January 6th? It's really interesting to compare the two. And then to I think, over the next few months to see how it spins out. Mm-hmm. You know?
And that indictment, I predict, will come down here in the next couple months.
Yep.
On Trump, you mean?
Yeah.
Oh, I think it's going to be sooner than that. Well, it's funny. Well, is hers going to come out first?
I think the theory is that the feds want theirs to come out first.
Yeah, that's what I would think. Although she was talking about August. I mean, it could happen soon. So, hey, guys, we're about out of time. Next week, Bruce, you're going to be hosting next week. And our small talk guest is going to be Amy Dreyer from Chamber, huh? Chamber of Commerce talking about Strawberry Festival. That should be really interesting. I've heard just nothing but great things about her, by the way.
I have, too.
She's just a ball of energy.
Yeah, I've heard great things about the MCs of the parade.
They should be really amazing. I mean, they can even get up on the stage and talk.
And they keep their balance.
Yeah, that's right. You've got to have a hand puppet up there, you know, doing the thing.
Hopefully they'll have a script this year.
Yeah, well, we hope. Why go there now? They never
just
have.
Make it up as we go along.
Yeah, right.
So for Craig and Bruce and myself and Kevin, wherever you are, Kevin, we hope you join us next week, and we all appreciate you tuning in. And by the way, I've gotten some really nice positive reports for our last show about Brian Breno and talking about the Icos. Mm-hmm. Several people have come up and said, "Oh, we really enjoyed that show." So somebody's listening out there.
Yeah.
All right, guys. See you all next week.
All right. Thanks.
Goodbye.
Bye now.